Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today is a Chico businesswoman whose first book, The Third Floor, told of her experiences in a home for unwed mothers when she was a young teen in the 1960s. She was forced to give up that son to adoption. Judy Lauren Grace took her father's middle name, Lauren, as one of her surnames after his death. She has now written a second book, Dreamscape in A Minor, about her musically gifted son, Jeff Harris, his life and death by suicide at the age of 21. She describes her own journey to heal and understand and to answer the question, where does your soul go when you die? Judy Lauren Grace, welcome.
It's nice to be here.
Now, I did say that your name is Judy Lauren Grace, and Lauren Grace are your surnames, but in your book you say you have a middle name. Do you remember what you said? You said, Weird is my middle name. You remember saying that?
Oh, I say that all the time. You don't know me, and where's my middle name?
Well, we'll see if people
okay.
think that's weird or just...
That's fine.
Just unusual. Well, when I was reading your first book, The Third Floor, I felt there were a lot of unanswered questions. In fact, I even confused your son, Jeff, and I guess your son, Spencer.
No. Or David.
No, I confused David and Jeff. Because there was not a lot of information there. And so a lot of the questions that I had after reading your first book was answered in this second book you've just written.
Right.
But it also raised a lot of questions. And you go through with questions. For example, one of the things I wondered about, because you're accepting his death as a suicide, but at one point in the book, from what somebody else said, I wondered, well, was it really a suicide or was it an accident?
A lot of people wonder that because no one was there. And my father, he was involved in the shooting. And I explained it in the book. I lay it all out, what happened. And no one will really know for sure. But I do know that Jeff was very, very frightened to go on this journey from someone that saw him in a pawn shop looking at guns. And his hands were so sweaty and shaking.
Mm-hmm.
This is afterwards when I was, you know, being a detective trying to figure out what happened. And I don't know if my father had walked in the garage if he would have completed that idea of killing himself.
So you think perhaps Jeff was sitting in his grandfather's garage maybe thinking about it?
He was.
And maybe his grandfather came in and startled him and maybe it was, didn't mean to do it right then?
My father had just walked 6 miles as he did every day. And he always waves when he sees someone. He lifts his arm and waves. And I'm sure he walked up into the garage and waved, oh, hi, Jeff. And the police said it was like a knee-jerk reaction. The gun went off from his lap because my daughter asked me about that. How do you know he didn't point his arm? Well, I can only surmise there must have been gunpowder residue or something on his lap.
That he didn't take aim at his grandfather.
No, it just took off.
And we might mention that your son did die then, but your father, Jeff's grandfather, did not die right away.
No, Jeff waited, they said, about 3 to 5 minutes, and then there was a second gunshot. Then my father lived 6 weeks. But as he lay there, I'm sure Jeff thought he had just killed his grandfather. So it's a puzzle no one will ever be able to put together.
Well, you know, something that your grandfather said when you told him what had happened, because you didn't know that much, but your grandfather said, I think Jeff wanted me to go with him on his journey.
He did say that, and I'm a natural talker, but I was speechless. I didn't know what to say, and he believed that.
Well, you know what it seemed to me then is that your father wasn't blaming Jeff, saying, how could he do this to me? Your son is just an awful person. He shot me. What he was saying was, I think Jeff wanted me to go on this journey with him.
And
I was touched by that.
When he found out exactly what happened, no one told him in the hospital exactly what had happened. He just had tears in his eyes. Well, where did Jeff, did it? where was his funeral? I mean, he didn't know anything, so I'm grieving for my son and have to relive it and go through it with my father. So,
My guest is Judy Lauren Grace, and she has written a book, Dreamscape in A Minor, about her life with her son and her other children. So when Jeff shot himself, and this wasn't here in Chico, in fact, you weren't here. You were in the Bay Area having a wonderful time with your other children.
Yes.
And then what happened?
Well, no one could find me. It never occurred to me to tell everybody where I was going. I was just going to San Francisco, and my kids were going to go to a concert. When I got home, the phone was just blinking just constantly. It was just like maybe 20, 30 messages. And that's when I found out, on Sunday night.
So you are suddenly confronted with the fact that your son has committed suicide. And then they have a question for you, they meaning the doctors, who want to harvest his organs. And you are in shock from what has just happened, and you have to make that decision.
Right. I could barely speak. And I had to give all the information. It's terrible.
Well, people might be wondering how long ago this took place. So how long ago was this? Your son committed suicide.
It was in September 1990.
So you've had 24 years
Yes.
to think about this, to try to figure it out. And one thing that you have done to try to look back at, were there any signs before? Is there anything I could have done? Because, Judy, one sentence that I wonder when readers read this, this is what you wrote in your book. I will feel responsible. You're talking to your son, Jeff. Mm-hmm. Your whole book is addressed to your son, Jeff.
Right.
I will feel responsible for you and your death for the rest of my life. Do you still, I mean, you've just written this recently, but do you still feel that, Judy?
I do. Any parent would. Every parent out there who's lost a child to suicide will always feel they could have done something more. They should have either seen the signs or been in counseling with their child, or there's just something I could have done or could have spotted. I just wish I could have whisked him away and take him to Hawaii, and we could have laid in with warm sand, and I could have talked to him about his, where he was coming from in his mind.
Well, you know, one reason you say you address your book to Jeff is, if you're talking to him, is that you feel that you do, that you still are able to talk to him. And if he and you are able to now feel like you can communicate with each other, I'm sure he's telling you, Mom, or he actually called you Ham.
Ham,
because
yeah.
I would think he would tell you, don't worry about me. I wouldn't think he's blaming you for what you didn't do.
He probably doesn't. He was walking his own path. He knew who he was. He wasn't in a good place. But it's my own mind. It's how I feel. It's I have a wounded heart, and that it'll always be that way.
My guest is Judy Lauren Grace, and she has written a memoir, Dreamscape in A Minor, and you have that musical reference because your son was very talented.
You can't even imagine the things that he did with music, the piano. Oh.
So you might explain, in what way did he take lessons, and he just played music from music, reading the music on paper?
Well, his best friend Keith was musically inclined, and his mother had him lessons, what I heard, 5 years, but for classical piano lessons. And he came over, and I had just purchased an upright piano, and he was playing Beethoven and Bach.
He meaning Keith.
Keith was playing. Mm-hmm. And Jeff sat on the bench next to him and said, play that again. And then he just watched his fingers, scooted Keith off, and Jeff played Fleur de Lis. That's a Beethoven song. And then he went on to Bach and Invention Number 4 and other things. And what I remember him doing, I didn't put in the book, was he had a little, like a little cassette player, and he would play music over and over, listen to it, and then play it.
Mm-hmm. So he could do that.
He could do that.
And he had such a keen ear that then he was a good mimic also, which made
always
him
a mimic.
Funny.
Yes.
Well, in your book, you have some photographs of your family, and you have other children.
I have two other children. He had a brother. Spencer, the youngest one, who he played with all the time. They were 7 years apart, and then Dana, my daughter, is 5 years younger than Jeff. So they were 16 and 14 when he passed.
And you speculated also the fact that, and I mentioned when I introduced you that you wrote a book about your experiences and having a son when you were, your first son was born when you were 16, wasn't that the age?
Yes.
And
15, actually.
Well, I knew you got pregnant at 15.
Right.
And so this child, you wanted to keep, you weren't able to. The authorities, your family
right.
said, no, no, you can't keep this baby. So only a few years later, well, you got married, and at 22, which is a pretty young age, mm-hmm. you had your second son.
Right.
And you wondered about your motivation there.
Well, I've since learned, I didn't understand it at the time, that when you're a young teen mother or it's forced relinquishment, you tend to marry young and replace that child. The other extreme is to never have another child to honor the one that you had relinquished. But for me, I wanted a baby as soon as I could.
So you have the two children and they grow up. You have your son, Jeff, and his brother and sister that grow up. But now, Jeff, when he was born, the cord was wrapped around his neck.
Right.
So it was difficult. And you say that the doctor that delivered, now this is in Bakersfield,
mm-hmm.
the doctor that delivered this baby
mm-hmm.
turned up again in your life later. How was that?
Well, years later, I called the transplant hospital in San Francisco trying to locate where my son's organs and his soft tissue had gone. And the doctor that harvests his organs called me, and he had the same name as the doctor in Bakersfield. And I said, do you know, have you ever been to Bakersfield? And he asked me, why would you ask me that? And I said, because...
it was somewhat of an unusual name, Mundy, M-E-N-D-Y,
yes,
this
right.
Dr. Mundy.
Dr. Mundy delivered my baby in Bakersfield in 1969, and he hesitated and said, that's my father. So the doctor that delivered him and his son, 21 years later, harvested Jeff's organs. So that was... I knew right then and there were going to be more coincidences and this was going to line up.
In fact, after Jeff died and you wondered, well, where is he? Where does your soul go when you die? And so where did you turn to find answers to that question?
All religions. I did not lock any doors. I opened up my mind and I asked, Hindus, Sikhs, Episcopal Church, Jehovah's Witnesses, Jewish faith, Mormons, many, many religions, and I listened to what they said. And then I compiled everything into one chapter called A Common Thread.
Mm-hmm. To find out what do they, what does religion have to tell me about what Jeff is, where he is now, where our souls go? And did you get satisfaction from any of the answers?
I totally got satisfaction. It softened my personality, not just answered my question, but I feel like I can put down my plexiglass that I've had around me, and I'm satisfied with the answers that I got. In the book, I write, maybe it's time for me to lay down my armor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, this, I want listeners mm-hmm. to know that it is not all doom and gloom, so to speak.
Right.
There are lighthearted moments in your book, and one that I laughed out loud, and you referred to this episode as Ethel and Lucy at the funeral home.
Right.
This is after your son, sometime after he had died.
Right.
And you'd had him cremated, his body. And why did you call that Ethel and Lucy at the funeral home?
Well, my niece drove up from the Central Valley, and we had to go to the funeral home to... design or buy an urn for Jeff.
And she said this word carefully.
I
an
did.
Urn.
An urn. And I put on my business face and cleared my throat, and I told him about my son, and I said I was here to purchase a urinal. And my niece leaned over there, and oh, She told me what I had said, but I just couldn't grasp it. I didn't know what she was talking about. I had put myself in the zone. I was so nervous to be in there and do that. And then finally she told me what I had said, and I calmed down, and then I said something else that was, I thought, was normal. But she leaned over, and I had ordered a coffin for my mother, who was gravely ill. And I ordered a coffin, and then Tammy leaned over and said, "Aunt Judy, they're called caskets. Only vampires live in coffins." So well, it was just...
What I was amused by, though, too, after you called an urn a urinal, said you're there to buy a urinal for your son's ashes, the funeral director said it wasn't the first time somebody made that mistake.
Yeah, he kind of just looked at us. He goes, "You'd be surprised how many people say that." And okay.
Well, something else that happened after, you're talking about these kind of coincidences or things that happened. After Jeff died and his grandfather, your dad, lived sometime after that, six weeks after that. But earlier that morning, on the day that your father died, you said it was 6:15 a.m., the cat came in and...
My cat galloped down the hallway. It woke me up. I could hear this galloping cat, and then she just dove on top of me.
And so you go in where you have a collection of tea cups and saucers, and you had four of them. One, a black teacup and saucer your dad had given you.
Right.
And what did you discover?
Well, after they told me your dad is gone, I just sat down on the couch and looked out the window and just was numb to this news. And I heard a crash, and the teacup and saucer fell and cracked and just disintegrated.
And none of the other teacups were bothered? Just the one that your dad had given you?
And I just said, "I know, Dad." So.
Well, when you're going through this, you feel like, well, I could use some counseling to deal with this. And so you referred to a counselor named Dale.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened when you made contact and had some appointments with this counselor?
Well, I don't want to talk about the ending, what I discovered. But he was the best, most gentle, wonderful person, and he talked to me like no other person had. And he said I needed to write a letter to Jeff as if I were sitting next to him in the hospital holding his hand as they kept him alive for transplant. And then so I did. I wrote my letter, and for the book, I opened, I got it out of its place where I'd kept it all these years, and I published it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
There's more to that story.
There
but
is,
we'll just
but
leave
you'd
that.
Rather not talk about that. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, when you are dealing with people after your son has died, and some of them just avoid saying his name, and some people don't say the right thing. I remember many years ago, my sister-in-law lost a 21-year-old son suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
He was killed by a car. And I didn't know what to say. And I think back, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I'm sure I said the wrong things. And it was, I just didn't know.
Yeah.
But there was one thing that a client said to you that seems like anybody would know not to say this. She said after, because your son was, he was in a lot of ways a problem child.
He was.
But he said, she said, "Well, it's all for the best. He's always been a thorn in your side."
Right. I had done her hair for years. Jeff was hard to deal with, even though he was hysterical and funny and gentle and kind. He was also stubborn. And I probably had told her things. And my heart fell to my feet. I was so hurt by that. And I just handed her a piece of paper and gave her the name of three other hairdressers. She could try those.
Well, you have in 1 mile here in Bidwell Park in Chico, you have a memory bench that overlooks the swimming area there. So that's one way you have memorialized your son.
Right.
Now, when you were seeking answers, you mentioned that you were very open-minded. You didn't leave any stone unturned. And you mentioned also that as a hairdresser, sometimes, for example, a lady here in town contacted you and said, "Judy, would you like to do a trade? You do my hair, and I'll do a reading for you.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who goes down Mangrove for years has seen a sign that says Madam Ruby.
Right.
So Madam Ruby contacted you, and you said, yeah, okay, we'll do this trade. And so how was she helpful?
Well, I went in. I didn't expect anything. I just was...
Because she didn't know anything
right,
about
she
you.
She didn't know anything about me, and she absolutely blew me out of the water. She said things that I didn't expect, and then she felt very... She seemed a little uncomfortable, and she relaxed, and I relaxed, and we looked at each other, and then she said, you know...
Well, one of the things she said was he was not ready to go.
Right.
That he was not supposed to go. It was not his time.
Right. She said... Well, she started off by saying, may I talk about something very personal? And I said,
so
okay.
She did ask your permission
she
before she
asked my permission, and then,
this.
Then she said he wasn't ready. It wasn't his time, and he's in limbo, and he'll contact you. I just couldn't believe it. I really didn't write too much about that. I wrote about how I felt and what she said, but I sort of veered off onto other things. I think there's just some things that my mind won't let me go there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My guest is Judy Lauren Grace, and she has written a book, Dreamscape in A Minor, about her musically talented son who committed suicide at age 21. And she mentioned that he would be contacting you. And, yeah, Judy, you were going to say something else about
Madam. Well, I just want to add that after I wrote The Third Floor.
Your first book.
My first book, there were an amazing number of people who didn't ask about, did you find your son after you put him for adoption? They ask, what happened to Jeff? Because I put one sentence in there about losing Jeff. That's mm-hmm. why I wrote this book. I realized mm-hmm. people want to know, yeah. and he needs...
Yeah. I was one of the ones when I read your book, Wonder
okay.
Book, but what about Jeff?
Yeah.
So I was glad you wrote this book to explain that. But you know one thing, too, that you... So you contacted a medium here in town, Mary Kay.
Yes.
And as an animal lover... I was reassured when Mary Kay said, well, she didn't know anything about you either. You didn't tell her your background.
No.
But she says, Jeff has Sheba with him.
Yes. She said so many things. She described him and said he's the most animated, excited spirit I've ever seen. She goes, he's just all over the place. He's so excited. He's been waiting a long time to tell you things. So,
and then he said... It was an accident.
That's the first thing out of Mary Kay's mouth. He wants you to know it was an accident. She didn't even know I had a son or what happened. So I began to listen.
That's why I ask you in the beginning because you write the book saying mm-hmm. it's a suicide. But then when you come to that sentence, when Mary Kay is saying your son is here and he wants you to know it was an accident.
It was an accident. But it was suicide.
He had been contemplating it.
Right. Yeah. My son said, my youngest son, Spencer, said it all. He said, Jeff had two choices, and in a split second, he took the wrong one.
You know, they often say that about people who maybe are on a bridge, like the
right.
Golden Gate Bridge, and just...
If you just wait, just wait it out. Everything mm-hmm. changes.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Judy Lauren Grace, and she has written a book, Dreamscape in A Minor, about the suicide
right.
of her son. And you mentioned that maybe there were hints that you didn't pick up on, and you mentioned how animated he was when Mary Kay was
right.
describing it. But also there was something early when he was just a baby, and you went to have his picture taken, and a photographer was trying to get him to smile and he tried everything that normally worked, and he said he had never in 20 years seen a baby give him such a deadpan stare as your son, Jeff, when he was a baby.
Maybe it was part of his personality that he couldn't interact with people. He really was quiet and shy, but animated around his family. But I have so many pictures of him, age 3, age whatever, staring in a picture. The only time I could get him to smile is if I bought him a new pair of tennis shoes and he would smile for the camera because he had new tennis shoes on.
Well, people might wonder, well, Judy, he had these problems. Did you ever get a diagnosis? For example, was he schizophrenic?
I took him to Dr. Stuart Bedford when he was 15, and then I took him again when he was 19. And Dr. Bedford saw signs of schizophrenia and possible suicidal tendencies, which I don't even remember seeing that in print. And I couldn't believe the schizophrenia. And that's one of the guilts I have, is I didn't address it or believe it.
Do you now?
I do think it was headed that way because of his hostility the last year he lived, and his highs and lows that he had, and anger issues. And I didn't know where that was coming from. And I should have listened, paid attention, believed it.
You mentioned as I was reading your book, Judy, I was seeing it as a movie, but I thought, no, nobody would ever make this as a movie because it wouldn't believe that all the things that happened to you in your life, couldn't believe this could be true, that there are things like when, first of all, he was really excited about playing junior high football, and they took that away, said, no, you're lacking a couple of points in your grade, you can't do that. And then he had this good friend, Sean, and they just went everywhere together. The two of them just got along, had a great time. And then when Sean had an accident, that was just a real punch that Jeff took.
It was. He stood by his friend. He was in the hospital with Sean's mother, and he did everything. And he was a loyal friend, but Sean never really he truly didn't recover from the brain injury.
Well, your book, we've just touched on some of the coincidences,
yes,
and things that, because your life, as I said, it's so unbelievable, people would have a hard time believing that
exactly.
Any one person could go through what
you've
done.
I'm laughing because it's just like, I know. It's just, I just try to live a normal life, and it didn't turn out that way.
Well, your book is a really interesting read.
Thank you.
I'm sure readers will enjoy it. The book is Dreamscape in A Minor. The author is Judy Lauren Grace. Thank you, Judy.
Thank you for having me.
You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, kcho.org. I'm Nancy Wiegman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.